The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and to my left is Tiziana, Mom So Hard Severse.
If you want to go to the pool, you got to clean your room. It is summertime and it is hot.
Those were the worst. I want to go to the pool, but you got to clean your room. Mom, that's going to take me like 6 hours.
Well, you know what?
You should have started yesterday.
And you just heard the sweet, innocent little voice of the Honorable Sarita the Hammer Edgerton.
Represent. Hammer down.
Represent. Behind the glass is Rocket Man Andy Bishop. And to my right, sexier than the big, beautiful Bill, Big Daddy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mean to bring that up. We're not even going to talk about that in here.
I am thinking about making the crossbar in my name's Sarita across the T. I'm thinking about making it in the shape of a hammer.
Ah.
For my logo for this next time.
That's good.
That is good.
I like that. We are finally back to our Daniel study.
Can you guys believe it?
Yeah, we did the, and everybody's in the room except for Billy. We don't have Billy. We don't have Ralph. And Cherry sent me a text, and I need to respond to that. She's still in Maine. And so who knows what's going on with the Burrows. But I will tell you this, for those of you listening, we are about to begin auditioning for a new cast member. We're going to get another female full-time cast member up in here. And so we'll see how that goes, because the men far outweigh the women right now, which is good.
Well, we're not pulling out the scale, are we? Don't you dare.
You got it.
No, we got you covered.
I'm down 70 pounds.
I know. I'm jealous.
Turns out eating with reckless abandon does not work for a man. Who knew?
And drinking sodas.
Yeah, chocolate-covered sugar bombers and all the other things that I love.
Copious amounts of soda.
Yeah. So our man, greatly beloved study, kind of went off the rails. You guys heard the sidetrack that we did. We're back on. We're going on to Daniel chapter 8, which is a really fascinating chapter. And I would like to ask Tiziana, you've got your Bible handy with you, right?
I have, yeah.
Do you mind? Let's just read the chapter.
Just the whole thing.
Yeah, and listen, guys, if you don't want to sit and listen, you know, to all these verses, you can probably hit that little skip button.
It's long.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. All right.
Why don't you read the first 14 verses?
Okay.
Let's go with that.
In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one that had appeared to me at first. In the vision, I was looking and saw myself in Susa, the capital, in the province of Elam, and I was by the river Ulai. I looked up and saw a ram standing beside the river. It had two horns. Both horns were long, but one was longer than the other, and the longer one came up second. I saw the ram charging westward and northward and southward. All beasts were powerless to withstand it, and no one could rescue from its power. It did as it pleased and became strong. As I watched, a male goat appeared from the west, coming across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. The goat had a horn between its eyes. It came toward the ram with the two horns that I had seen standing beside the river, and it ran at it with savage force.
Is this a goat-a-corn?
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry, I could not let that pass.
No, nor should you have. Thank you. Thank you for that interjection. It came toward the ram with the two horns that I had seen standing beside the river, and it ran at it with savage force. I saw it approaching the ram. It was enraged against it and struck the ram, breaking its two horns. The ram did not have power to withstand it. It threw the ram down to the ground and trampled upon it, and there was no one who could rescue the ram from its power. Then the male goat grew exceedingly great, but at the height of its power, the great horn was broken, and in its place there came up four prominent horns toward the four winds of heaven. Out of one of them came another horn, a little one, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the beautiful land. It grew as high as the host of heaven. It threw down to the earth some of the host and some of the stars and trampled on them. Even against the prince of the host, it acted arrogantly. It took the regular burnt offering away from him and overthrew the place of his sanctuary. Because of wickedness, the host was given over to it together with the regular burnt offering. It cast truth to the ground and kept prospering in what it did. Then I saw a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the one that spoke, "For how long is this vision concerning the regular burnt offering, the transgression that makes desolate, and the giving over of the sanctuary to the host to be trampled?" And he answered him, "For 2,300 evenings and mornings. Then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state."
Thank you. When I read that, the first thing that I noticed is where Daniel was. We went back, now we're back in Babylon. We're back to where he is with King Belshazzar, the chiastic structure. So the weird part is this Daniel chapter 8 is now written in Hebrew. It's no longer the Aramaic. And we are with King Belshazzar before he falls to whoever that was, Darius the Mede or Cyrus the Great, or whoever he was. Yeah. But before, so we're going back a little bit. And Daniel, but what's fascinating is that Daniel sees in this vision the capital of Persia. That's what he's seeing, is from the capital. He's in Susa, the capital. And so this is kicking off, that vision is kicking off from that position, and he immediately sees these two rams. Right.
Well, a ram and a goat.
A ram and a goat. Yeah. These two creatures. Yes.
Yeah.
A ram and a goat from Persia, which is kind of cool because, do you have your Bible with you?
Yeah.
I'm going to get you to read the second half of this because now we're going to be introduced to this character. That's the first time he's ever mentioned in the Bible. We're going to get introduced to him and he's going to tell Daniel what this is. Right. So let's just go ahead and read the second half and then we'll talk it out.
Okay. Then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, who called and said, "Gabriel, make this man understand the vision." I feel like I should have done that in a different voice.
Gabriel,
make this man understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, "Understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end." Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground. But he touched me and stood me upright. By the way, I want to make a point about this particular verse at some point.
Okay.
And he said, "Look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation. For at the appointed time, the end shall be. The ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. And the vision of the evenings and mornings, which is told, is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick 4 days. Afterward, I arose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it.
That is a wild section to me. It's a wild section of scripture.
that guy and Goat of Corn are kind of the same. Are the same guy, right?
Right. You got it.
Yeah. Right, that's what I think. Okay.
So that name Gabriel, that's the first time that you are ever introduced to him as a character in the Bible. Gabriel.
Really?
That's where he shows up. What? Daniel chapter 8.
That's the first time.
Isn't that neat?
And then he shows up again in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting.
He's always the messenger.
Always.
Yeah. And then in Revelation, he's the messenger as well.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wild? So he spans across time.
Yeah.
So is that a human being?
Nope.
I don't know how it could be. Now, somebody says to me, well, he's always seen in a vision. He's always in a vision being seen.
But he's given very
specific information.
Personified
features,
powers, and actions. He looks like a man. Mm-hmm. He talks like a man. He's obviously fierce in the way he looks because Daniel falls down afraid of him. But I think
he's buff.
He's got to be glowing. You know, everything in heaven, as it's described in the Bible, typically there's a glow about it. There's a glow about the way the angels look. You know, they're very fearsome.
He's got that Arnold Schwarzenegger circa Terminator 1 physique.
He's gotta,
you know?
Yes.
He's gotta, and he's gotta have, he's gotta have sort of a flowing, I think of a flowing mane.
Yeah.
But I, whatever it is, it scares the
heavenly
out
host
of them.
Is very big on good lighting.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
They don't play. They know lighting is super important.
That's where we get in theater.
Yeah, that's pretty consistent even though, like, throughout the entirety of the Hebrew Bible. Anytime like a messenger, well, very, very rarely is the messenger disguised in such a way. But most of the time, like, you know, when somebody appears, people are like, oh, it's always like very obvious that this is an otherworldly being. And then Gabriel says, oh, mortal. Like, he refers to Daniel as a mortal. I don't usually refer to other humans as people when I'm talking to them.
Well, if you go outside the Western world, when I was younger, we would have missionaries that would come and visit our churches and talk about their times in, like, Central Africa or Asia, you know, desolate parts of South America where there was no modern, very little modernity. And, you know, they would talk about seeing things that we just don't see here. And I don't know if it's because we're so overexposed with technology and now AI and all of that, but they would tell one particular one that got me is they were at a tribe in, I don't know where it was in Africa, and they were going to kill these missionaries, these people from America. And in the middle of the night, their entire family was woken up over here in the States, got down on the floor and began to pray. And as the attackers were coming, they all of a sudden turned around and went the other way. And the next day, one of the attackers came and said, who were those men? Where are those men? And they were like, there are no men. Well, they were surrounded by something that scared these attackers away, but they looked like men, fierce men. Mm-hmm. And so you hear about, there's story after story after story written of people who are outside our Western culture who see that. People in Iran, I heard a guy to give his testimony at camp one time. He was from Iran. He had to use an interpreter. But he said an angel appeared to him in a dream and told him about Jesus, and he got down on his knees at that moment, still half asleep, and accepted Christ, and then was persecuted and had to leave his country and come to America because somebody appeared to him in a dream. We're just so, I guess, inoculated against it, maybe?
Well, I think it happens here, too. I mean, it's just maybe it's just like the flow of information that we have, it just gets lost in the sauce. It's like not elevated as something miraculous or important.
We had that one guy.
Somehow.
What was, Rick, that guest that had the...
Yes.
That crazy story.
Yeah. He had lupus and he was up in Michigan and he saw that it looked like an alien,
Could be. Something that sounded terrible.
Changed his life.
Approximately terrible in the way that early biblical, look away from the terrible thing that came from heaven. Like that, you know, it was kind of in that way.
Yeah.
Well, Nana.
I'll go ahead and say, that part that I wanted to talk about, where he was in a deep sleep on his face. It happened to me, and if anybody's remembers my story, we were at a youth conference, and I was brand new Christian. I had grown up in church, but I didn't have any preconceived notions. I didn't know about angels appearing to people. I'd never read Daniel. I'd never read some of these stories. I'd heard that an angel came to Mary, but, I mean, that's Mary. Mm-hmm. She's the mother of Jesus. But I asked God, we were singing a song, and I said, I want to see you, Lord. And I hit the floor, and for 5 minutes, as my husband and the others thought I had passed out, I was gone. Mm-hmm. But I was in heaven seeing Jesus holding my infant that I had aborted, and he was showing me him. And I didn't know it at the time. What I was experiencing was so similar. But for 5 minutes, they were literally like moving me around.
Like, was it like a trance-like state?
They said it was like I was asleep. He said, your eyes were open. He said, when we rolled you over, because you had made a puddle, you were crying. And you'd made a puddle in the carpet. You'd wet the carpet. You were crying so much. Mm-hmm. He said, and your eyes were open, but you were not there.
Yeah.
He said, you were whatever that makes you you.
Yeah.
You were breathing, but you weren't there. And he said, if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes and everybody in here witnessed it, none of us would believe you.
Yeah. I had, you know, I think I shared my experience, my own personal experience here, haven't I? My angelic experience? Me?
I might have to hear it again because it's not coming to me like right now.
So I worked in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Was that a guy on the side of the road?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Okay. I worked in Spartanburg, South Carolina. I was coming home in the evening. It was around 5:30 when I got there, and I was getting off. Back then it was exit 13. Now it's exit 44. It's Fletcher Mountain Home exit. And I was getting off coming from the South Carolina way up into Fletcher on the right-hand side. And there was a man that was sitting. He was wearing like white painter's pants and he had a white shirt on and he was sitting on a white 5 gallon bucket. He had, have you ever seen like the army issued glasses? You know, they called them Ricky glasses, actually what they call them. And he had those on. He had like a buzz cut and he was just sitting there and he said, going to California, need food. So I thought that was kind of weird, you know, and I was thinking like Grapes of Wrath kind of stuff, you know, like, you sure you want to go to California? You know, whatever. Yeah. So anyway, but I pulled off and I walked over and I was just talking to him and, you know, he said that he was indeed going to California and I said, you know, well, what can I do? And he looked at me dead in the eyes and he said, I'm a Christian. Do you know that? And I was like, no, sir, I don't, but I am as well. And he was like, okay, I just wanted you to know that. And I said, okay. I said, well, I tell you what, I said, I don't have a lot of money. I said, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go home and I'm going to get you some stuff. And so I did. I went home and I got a sleeping bag and I got like a 12 pack, you know, of these. Unfortunately, they were diet caffeine free Cokes because I was trying to lose weight back then too. And
so like just inconveniently packaged air.
Pretty much. And packed him several sandwiches and things like that to take back to him for his, you know, so we'd be able to eat and have things on the. So I gave him like my lunch cooler.
Yeah.
And the little ice packs that go with it, you know. And I drove over there and I went down across the bridge and came back and moved over, basically parked where I had parked before on the other side mm-hmm. of the exit. He was sitting next to the bridge there over 26. And I walked up to him and I said, I'm sorry, I can't give you any money or anything because I literally don't have any. And so this is what I have to offer. And he was so kind. He was just like, he was moved by it. He was like, thank you so much. He's like, now he's like, I'll be able to eat for several days on this, you know, and when I get to California. And I was like, okay. And so I said, well, you know, and I was nervous. Like I wanted to pray with him, but I didn't, you know, and I was just like, it's okay. And I was like, so I wish the best for you. And so as he's sitting in the grass, and as I turn to cross over the exit, okay, as I'm walking across the exit, I thought of something, you know, and I was dealing with that feeling of wanting to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around, and he was completely gone, and so was all of the stuff. Everything was gone. Everything was gone. The 5 gallon bucket, him, all the stuff that I gave him, my sleeping bag, the cooler, everything. There was no time for him to get in another car. There was no time for him to run. There was no time for him to go anywhere.
I'm pretty sure I have not heard this.
I've never heard this.
I've
never
heard that.
I tell the story because it is 100% factual and true. It is not Alan Bondar reconsolidated memory. This was such an experience that affected me because I turned around and I ran back over there and I'm looking around and I'm thinking, you know, did he go up on underneath the bridge or where did he go?
Yeah, with all that stuff.
He didn't have time.
Yeah, there was no time.
There was not enough time.
Yeah.
And so I ran to my truck and I drove home and I told my wife, I was like, I don't know what is going on. And like, we were kind of freaking out. She's like, did he get in another car? And I was like, no, there were no cars. Like he was just gone. I don't understand this. And so like, if something had been left there, then maybe he could have like hopped in a car or something, but there was not enough time. He would have had to have had a conversation and all the stuff to happen. None of it happened. He was just gone.
My grandma has a story like that.
So I went to church that following Sunday and I told the pastor, I was like, this happened. I went in his office actually and was talking to him about it. And he pulled out a scripture and he was talking about entertaining angels, but being unaware, like not knowing it. He said, he looked at me and he was like, sounds to me like you passed the test. I mean, all of that experience. Again,
those diet caffeine-free Pepsis are counted as gold and silver honestly, and bronze happened, and not Haywood and stubble.
Went straight to heaven. Lord cracked one and said, thanks, Rick.
What happened was when he put him in the cooler, it literally lifted him up into the heavens.
Yeah.
So, but it is a 100% true story. I had that experience. It's real. I'm not lying. I have no reason to lie.
Yeah.
It affected me in such a way that I built an altar in my heart over that experience that's so powerful to me that when people look at me and say, oh, these things aren't real, I don't care.
I know what I experienced.
I know what I experienced, and yeah. I'm not going to lie about it. I have no reason to. I had that experience. And so when people tell me stories that are similar, I just automatically believe them.
Automatically,
I have no reason not to.
I can still, to this day, 25 years later, see the face of my son because he was holding him, and then I saw him in every phase of life. Mm-hmm. And I can still see the face of my son as if I'm still seeing that vision.
Yeah.
This man turned around holding my baby.
Yeah.
Looking down at him, I knew immediately he was Jesus. He didn't look like the Jesus I'd seen in a lot of pictures, but he was different looking, but he was looking at my son with such love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
I can see, I can feel it.
Yeah.
Like the hair on my body stands up.
I 1,000,000% believe you.
Yeah. I mean, it was so real, you know, and like my husband said, if I wasn't watching you, I would not believe you.
Yeah.
And I'm married to you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, if you had this experience and somebody else, he said, I would have a hard time believing this, but you were gone.
Yeah. And so like, and I don't mean to like take a turn back to this, but
he's the same way.
Daniel has been given so many wild gifts in all of this
This stuff has happened to him before, and he's still sick to his stomach, mm-hmm. mystified, don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, in awe. But he's had this happen to him before. He's had these handwriting on the wall. I mean, who sees a hand?
Writing that would have been after, right?
Well, you're right.
This happened before.
But he would have had other dreams prior to.
Listen, do you remember when King Belshazzar wanted to put robes and give him these expensive things, do you remember how Daniel didn't give a rip?
Because he knew.
This is why.
He was like, yo, I already know how this story ends, bro.
He's like, the Medo-Persians are about to wipe you out.
Yeah,
like,
you are about coming. To
you. You about to meet your Micah.
I know, yeah. I think, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Daniel's like, pfft.
Now, what's really cool, too, I don't know if you study the Book of Esther, Susa the Citadel is a big deal. Like, everything centers in that section in Susa the Citadel during the Persian Empire, right? With mm-hmm. Xerxes I or whatever it is, with King Ahasuerus or whatever. Mm-hmm. So Daniel is seeing forward to the time when Media and Persia are united together are going to come in, and they're going to basically wipe out the Babylonian Empire, and they're going to take precedence. But then he sees this ram, right? Is it a ram or a goat?
It's a goat.
That has the goat one horn.
The goat attacks the ram.
Yes, thank you.
Alexander the Great.
I need to remember Andy's the goat acorn. So, but it says that
he
doesn't touch the ground, which means this is a swift acting, like this goat's like flying. He's like the flying goat acorn.
The flying goat acorn.
But what's wild,
he's literally the goat.
Now,
take that, Tom Brady.
We heard Sarita read that this was the king of Greece. And there's only one man that I can think
of. El Grande.
The Great. Alexander mm-hmm. the Great. He's the only one that I can think of that took over as an empire.
And then went and also placed other people in charge. You know what I mean?
When he died, mm-hmm. it split into four. The Diadochi, you said five, which I think you could prove, but the Diadochi, right?
Is that what they're called? And it was actually four.
Four.
And one of those split.
Yes.
Into two factions, as people who want power do. They'll sometimes split, but they were considered four
It's like the families.
Successors, not four families.
Mm-hmm.
But the family, the brothers, kind of like Lidl and Aldi.
Yes. Yep.
And Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Split.
So
they can't. I'm doing this like they can see my hands splitting. They split.
Because Gabriel has defined this, it certainly seems like this is, it's almost like a zoom in on the stories we've already heard. We've already heard about the statue that shows all of these major empires. Mm-hmm. We've heard about the beasts that are coming out and what's happening with these beasts like before this. So in this chapter, it's like he's super zooming in onto the two major ones, which is Media Persia and then Greece.
Well, the ones that are also going to most immediately affect the Jews.
Yes.
The ones that are going to most immediately affect their story, their timeline, and their, you know,
right.
relationship to God.
And can I say that when you look at the different dreams that he's interpreting or having, the ones that are not Jewish are all something that man made.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? The statue, I guess the beasts weren't merely man-made, but these are actual animals that represented, this would have spoken to the Jews of the time, goats and rams, where a statue would not have. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. These are things that the creator created, these animals, though it'd have to be the four horns and all of that. But, you know, these are things that the creator created.
Yeah.
So the symbolism there, I think, is pretty
pointed.
Palpable.
Specific.
You know, whereas the Jews, the ones who were believing Jews, like Daniel, are focused on trying to worship God in their circumstances where they are. Daniel included. Daniel has been monumental in my life this year, not because we're studying it, but because I want to try to govern or be an influencer like he was for God in a very dark place, my own Babylon.
Yeah.
Columbia. So all that to say is, you know, I think, you know, these symbols weren't symbols just he made up in his own mind. You know, these were symbols very pointed by God that the Jews would understand.
Sure. Rick, you've been awfully quiet. What do you think, man?
I think he was asleep. You ever make something so good, people start interrogating you like, what's in this? Did you make this from scratch? Where did you learn to cook like that? And I just smile because deep down, I know the truth. I didn't level up my skills. I leveled up my seasoning. It's called my secret ingredient. Let's start with the MVP. Everything. This blend? It's the Thor of the spice rack. Chicken. Glorious. Roasted veggies? I ate those on purpose. Yes, I sprinkled it on popcorn and suddenly became everyone's favorite movie host. And to be honest with you, I might have even tried it on possum. Yeehaw! Do I regret it? Of course. But only because I didn't notice that the tail was still on it. Rookie mistake. Everything just works. It's like confidence in a jar. Shake it on, and suddenly you're plating like you're on a cooking show without breaking a sweat. Then there's Steakhouse. This one's bold, smoky, and, like me, a bit dramatic. It makes burgers taste like they've been grilled by someone with strong opinions and great taste. I've used it on steak, mushrooms, even sweet potato fries. And every single time someone says, wait, did you marinate this for, what, 48 hours? Nope, just shook it on, flipped it, and took all the credit. Last week, my cousin asked me for a recipe, and I said, sure, I'll leave it to you in my will. So if you want to rule the kitchen without lifting a finger, go to mysecretblends.com. That's mysecretblends.com. And don't forget to use code BURROWS for 20% off your first order. Shake it. Serve it. Smile sweetly when they ask and say, shh, it's my secret.
No,
we were boring to you. I keep teasing.
Repeating something that we've talked about in past podcasts. I've really delved into the things that were going on between the Bible and in natural history, what was going on in Israel. I sent you the paper.
Yes.
Or it's like my little mini book.
I'm halfway through it.
Putting together, what do you think so far? Because it's connected.
Yeah, the history pieces of it are really interesting.
Texting and working on my phone through this and trying to see if there's a connection, because there's a in the book of Revelation chapter 13, there's a ram with two horns.
That's right.
In
Revelation 13.
So
that's where we're at in our study right now, actually.
Yeah.
It's so very bizarre how all this kind of fell together.
Yes. So you know, the connection between what's going on in Daniel is referring to that this particular vision is a direct division or a vision of at the end times.
Which is really bizarre because the timeline that they give it, which is 2300 evening and mornings.
Yeah.
That's like 6.16 years or something. Mm-hmm. If I'm reading it correctly.
Yeah. Is there a significance to the number 2300 that I'm missing?
I have never heard that number in all of scripture.
Yeah. And it's weird because like it has to do, like Jeremiah has his whole 70 years thing. Yeah. It's like, it's not weird,
the 3.5 years or the 42 months or anything like that. It's this weird. Is very distinctly different.
I can see what the notes say.
And he's talking about the time of the end. And when he talks about this one that if you think about it, this is during... Whenever you have the four powers, the Diadashi, that are, you know, that they're in power, which is basically the Hellenistic period that we're talking about now, there is this one figure that pops up. Antiochus Epiphanes pops up.
The very last.
He comes up. Yeah, the very last. It seems to me.
He's an Antichrist figure. Right.
Well, and this thing says, that my study Bible here, says that. That 3 years, the 3.5 years, is the exact period of time according to First Maccabees, which, of course, is the book that describes and outlines the Jewish uprising against Antiochus Epiphanes.
Yes.
That the desolation—
That's the Maccabean revolt.
That's right. So it says that the 3.5 years, about 1,260 days, and according to First Maccabees 1:54 through 4:52, the period of the desecration of the sanctuary lasted exactly 3 years.
Yeah.
So—
It's wild.
Yeah.
Well, in my question, and I may be wrong, is that where is the end that he's referring to?
Exactly. And see, that's the part that's confusing to me.
100%.
Because it almost feels like he's describing the time of the end that Jesus is talking about in his time of the end.
Right.
But it doesn't match. It doesn't work correctly.
Well, so
it doesn't work.
It depends upon, and this is where we have to, and I get it. We have to speculate to some extent because we don't know the definitions of what he's referring to as the animals and the horns. Those are significant. Those are all images of certain things that even the book of Revelation is pointing out.
It seems to
me,
though,
contexts.
It's pointing out the powers and principalities or the empires.
Right.
It keeps talking about the empires.
But could it also be referring to the gods that are controlling those countries, like in the Divine Council?
That's a great question.
It's a power.
It's quite possible.
Now, there are several, when I was kind of going through this, you know, trying to look at it from y'all's perspective of preterism and my perspective of futurism, a lot of even... preterists, some of them will say, kind of like some of our futurists, prophecies often have multiple fulfillments and they're not always linear in the way that they're revealed. So in the middle of a prophecy, you could be talking about Jesus' first coming. There are several Psalms that talk about Jesus' first coming, and then all of a sudden they jump to his death. And then they go back to his birth. And so... it's just weird. They're not always linear. Mm-hmm. Think about your own dreams and how chaotic. Like I dreamed I was Lieutenant Governor of South Carolina the other day. I mean,
did you?
Yes, twice, twice in one weekend. I dreamt it under a specific governor. And I called him. I was like, "Hey, you running for governor?" He's like, "How did you know?" I was like,
"Yeah."
I don't. My husband's like, "We're not living in Lieutenant Governor's mansion." So no. I was like, "Okay." Anyway, all that to say, sometimes we think of things as being, they've got to be in this exact order because that's the way he talked about them or they were written down, but they're not always like that. And sometimes they have multiple fulfillments mm-hmm. in time. Antiochus Epiphanes being a type of Antichrist, an archetype, isn't that what we call it? Isn't that the literary term? An archetype, just like Joseph was an archetype of the Messiah. And I just read Ruth the other day, thinking about how Ruth is the grafted vine and Naomi is the vine, church mm-hmm. in Israel. Like I had never read it in that perspective before. It was absolutely eye-opening, but that's an archetype of redemption, of salvation, of Gentiles and Jews. Mm-hmm. So
they redeem each other in that story.
They're
you know?
Archetypes
yes.
of future things to come. So I think when we try to get super linear, super specific, He even says, how about you just seal this thing up right now? Because nobody's going to understand it.
Yeah.
So just seal it up. Mm-hmm. And we'll just talk about it later.
Don't worry about it.
And here's the thing. So,
but he worried about it for sick for days.
Well, I mean, even Jesus, when he opens up the scroll of Isaiah and he says, you know, bring freedom to the captives, preach,
the year of the Lord's favor.
Right. And he's like, today this is fulfilled in your hearing. And mm-hmm. obviously there was a period of time where that verse was more culturally relevant in the time that it was spoken and
yes.
definitely had a fulfillment at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, so it wasn't like Jesus was saying, you know, to Sarita's point, I am now fulfilling this prophecy now. He was saying, this is a prophecy. This is an example of a prophecy that has relevance over again and again and again.
Yes.
You know, and so it's that there's plenty of precedent for that, even so, in Jesus's things he said about himself.
Exactly.
Which then Jesus also says that everything written in the old part was pointing to me.
Now, and I was getting ready to get to that.
Yeah.
Because this is something that I've been working on for quite some time because it's mind blowing. I thank Bob Cruikshank for this. I really do. He unlocked this for me. But so the 2300 days are evenings and mornings. I was trying to figure out, like, why is it saying it like that? And when
mine just said days.
Right.
Mine didn't say evenings and mornings.
Yeah, mine
but that
says,
does point back to Genesis, evenings and mornings.
The evenings and mornings. And so I thought it meant 2300 days. It's not. It's talking about the sacrifices. There's one in the morning and there's one in the evening. So it breaks down to 1,150 actual days, which is exactly how long Antiochus Epiphanes desecrated the temple to the day.
Oh, wow.
So it seems to be pointing to Antiochus Epiphanes. It really fits in because it's a super zoom on Media Persia and Greece.
Uh-huh.
And Antiochus Epiphanes was during the time of the four, the Didashi, right? He's coming in at that time. This is prior to Rome, which is going to be that fourth beast or the iron and the clay, or mm-hmm. is it whoever, the Islamic Caliphate, whichever. It doesn't matter to me. Whatever that next empire.
By the way, I have an answer for your question that you asked me in the other one, but we'll talk about that some other time.
Yeah,
we're not going to get to it today.
Let's remember. No, we will. Let's do it at the very end. So when I saw that, and I thought, wait a minute, what's going on? So do you remember how we did the thing on the virgin birth?
Yeah.
Meher Shalal Hashbaz, mm-hmm. and how Matthew used that same terminology, mm-hmm. pointing to Mary and Jesus. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we started, you know, questioning whether it was virgin or not or whatever. Mm-hmm. Get ready. I'm going to get thrown out of every church I go to. I don't think it's about the virgin birth at all. I don't. I think what's going on, just like when he says, Rachel weeping for her children, when it's talking about the massacre of the innocents, listen to me, get ready. It didn't happen. It didn't happen.
It's an idiom.
What he is using, and Tiziana, you said this so masterfully, you just don't know, I don't think you realize you said it. Matthew is borrowing from this language, and it's almost like putting a footnote in something. They didn't have footnotes in ancient writing. They just wrote out things, right? But they could use imagery or mm-hmm. symbolism or a line from another book, and the Jew would automatically remember. So when he's looking at the Massacre of the Innocents, what's unique about the Massacre of the Innocents? That was the time of Moses. That was the time when Moses was taken out and went down to Egypt, the original story. Remember the original story? That's mm-hmm. when it actually happened, was back in Egypt, whenever he was killing all the kids right. underneath too. Moses is the one that comes from that. So, but where does Moses end up going? Into the Pharaoh's sister's home in Egypt. That's where he's at. Mm-hmm. Then what happens later? He leaves and he goes into with the Midian priests uh-huh. and he's there for 40 years. And then he comes back and gets his people. And then out of Egypt, have I called my son, mm-hmm. which is in Hosea talking about the Exodus. Mm-hmm. About how they came from this certain place in Egypt, and then they came to the promised land, or to the Sinai, and then mm-hmm. eventually to the promised land. So whenever Matthew is using this, he's saying, "This Rachel's weeping for her children because Jesus is the new Moses, but he's the better one. He's the mediator. He's the new mediator of this new covenant. Mm. Out of Egypt, he goes to Egypt in exile.
Yeah.
He comes back from Egypt. Out of Egypt, have I called my son? This is the fulfillment of that, of those words. In other words, it had a near-time fulfillment. Big Daddy.
Okay.
But the purpose of its near-time fulfillment tells the total story. Whenever they talk about Jesus, they use those shadows and those types and those things from the Old Testament to tell you exactly who the Messiah
is. So he did it. He's basically doing it. so that when it would really play out, they'd have when they wrote it down,
they would know.
They would remember all what was going on.
Because, and I still, I should have done
this. And
that's
how Paul was convinced. I'm convinced of it.
Convinced of what?
Who Jesus was when he got knocked off his ass.
Yes. I think it was a horse.
He was on a donkey.
Was it?
He got knocked off.
Was he on an ass?
I think he was. Wasn't he on a donkey?
He got knocked on his ass, off his ass.
I thought you were saying,
what do you think,
like,
Andy?
I thought you were using it, the colloquialism, yeah, and so yeah. I thought
he got knocked on his ass, off his ass.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
I think he was on a horse, but whatever.
Okay.
A horse is a horse, of course. So yeah,
you're saying, I mean, that the massacre of the innocents of Herod, slaughtering all the children, that never occurred. There's no historical data that shows that happened.
Any.
Right. So, which is what we were talking about before when I said Matthew's employing a certain literary device to invoke,
yes,
a certain specific ideology because,
yes,
he's trying to paint a certain picture, but he's using the crayons y'all are familiar with.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so he's really, so even when he's saying that Herod killed all the children under two, he didn't really mean it. He's trying to remind you of the time when that did happen,
yes,
throwing Rachel crying for her children in there. So you'd know that's what he was doing, so that you would, in your mind, as a person reading it at the time, connect Christ to Moses.
Left Bethlehem, mm-hmm, and they went, yeah, into exile because whatever it was that Herod was doing, yeah, was enough to get Jesus out. He was warned in the dream.
He's coloring in with a stencil, and they want you to see that.
And if you think about it, all of the male children under 2 years old, the only ones that King Herod would actually be concerned with are the ones that were in the royal line of David.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
And there's only a few. Yeah. It's not like he's killing every child in the world. He's probably going after John the Baptist. Mm. He might be going after Jesus, but they're not massacring all the kids.
Yeah.
He's doing what a king does.
Right, right,
a
right.
A king who wants to keep, right, power kills all the,
yeah,
heirs.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
what he's doing.
Precisely.
And so he's pointing that out. That's what Matthew's doing, right? So when I read this in Daniel chapter 8, and it's pointing to the time of the end, and he says, seal it up. And Jesus later on will say, when this happens, all of vision and prophecy will be fulfilled. All of it. Jesus says, when you see what I'm talking about.
So all of it's done.
It's all over. It's done. When you see it. And that's the other thing. He's,
yeah,
telling his contemporary generation in front of him, when you see that.
It's all done.
It's all over. Then you know. So it's like all of these stories from the Old Testament, they are literally just types and shadows of the coming Messiah who's going to redeem us all.
When I think about it, because Jesus came first for the Jews, the good news is first for the Jews.
That's right.
And then for the Gentiles.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
For those Gentiles, or for those Jews that had already experienced the destruction of the temple and the loss of their ability to interact with God in the way that God had prescribed,
yep,
and the sorrow and the pain and the deep gut-wrenching grief that
yes,
caused,
mm-hmm,
all Jews, not just ones in Babylon, but the ones left behind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their relationship with their God was shattered with that temple.
Yes.
If you think about the fact that Jesus came with the foreknowledge that that was going to happen again.
Yes.
And how sad and heartbroken, you know, the hope was, it was like, it's okay, this is going to happen to you again, but it's okay. You can still have relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
We're just, you know, let's, it's just, it's going to be all right. We're going to do it a little different way. That actually, like, instead of this kind of like somewhat anti-Semitic version of the Jews that often gets portrayed, it's a very loving,
mm-hmm,
and kind thing that Jesus is saying.
Yes.
He's saying, it's okay. You're not at a total loss. You know what I mean? You're not destined to be ever forever removed from God because you can't sacrifice anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very loving thing for the Jewish nation.
Yeah.
You know?
I got you. Here's your little hopeless romantic view. You ready?
Yeah.
So the man and the woman are in the garden and they're with God, and then they suddenly lose that capacity. They no longer have that. And then man suffers and wants to be in his presence and longs and longs and longs and longs. And then God shows up and then he tells them and prescribes them to build tabernacle and to create a holy of holies in that tabernacle. And wherever you go, I'm going to go with you.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be times when you'll set me outside the camp, and there'll be times when we go together, and then the priest will come in and I will take care of those sins that are keeping, mm-hmm, us apart.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it. You covenant with me and I'll covenant with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, this tabernacle becomes a temple and this house is built. Now God is stationary. He's in this place. So the people have to come back to him to be able to have these moments with him. 7 feasts in a year, 3 of which the men have to come every single year in order to come and to be near God. That's where the holiness was in Jerusalem, in that place. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, all this is all corrupt and it's wrong. And this is what's going to happen. I'm going to take all this upon me. Mm. And I'm going to kill it. Mm. And then I'm going to come back. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be better for me to go, because when I do, we're going to send the Holy One. He's going to reside right with you. And wherever you go, I'll be where
that's
you
it.
Are. And yep. So God goes everywhere. Yeah.
Now God is everywhere.
He's everywhere. And he's
every
with
every one
you.
Of us is a tabernacle. Jesus,
it's such an important distinction. What'd you say?
I missed everybody's that. A tabernacle.
Everybody is a tabernacle.
Everybody. Right? Like that's everybody right. is a tabernacle.
We just did some research.
Yeah.
Me and Rick were just talking about this last night.
Really? That's incredible. Like if that doesn't hit you,
I know. Like,
what's going on?
If you don't
on?
Think that's a love story,
that's
I don't know what
pretty
it is.
Pretty amazing, you
and,
know?
And then yeah, we were talking about how like when Jesus came and it says in John 1:14, he says, and the world became flesh and tabernacled among us. It's the same word. It's tabernacling. And guess what? Jesus's mission, his ministry, when you move, go back and watch where the tabernacle goes and watch where Jesus goes. It will rock your world. They're in the same path, baby. he's going and getting his people. He's taking them on the same journey, but he's coming and he's getting them. He's the moving tabernacle.
I love that.
I feel his message is telling the Jews that he's the new temple.
Yeah.
Destroy it, and I'll raise it up in 3 days.
He said, he's be taking the place at his anointment with John the Baptist and becoming the new, he became the temple, the real temple that was in place that had the holy place within him, and he tabernacled with the people. And that's what he went and did and during his mission for 3.5 years is God tabernacled with the people in the city.
What is it when he goes to the temple? Have you ever heard about the high priest inspection of the temple?
Yes.
You ever heard of this? It's Old Testament. The high priest is the one that go in and inspect the house of God. Well, when Jesus goes to the temple, that's exactly what he's doing.
With the whips and when he goes in there and he's like, this is some BS.
He's cleaning it out.
Yeah,
you've turned it into a den of thieves. So that's why
Which is part of the corruption in that
That's
book.
The thing about your paper that was the most interesting to me and that I thought showed a lack of my knowledge of history and especially like first century politics between the chosen king, Herod, chosen not by God and not by lineage, but by the Roman government and installed by the Roman government, right? And Carter wrote this whole thing about like how Herod built onto the temple to make it look bigger, which again is outside of the prescriptions that God had given in order to make it look fancier. And that there was this like, you know, this relationship between the temple and Rome and
for
Rome
money.
Was making money off of the sacrifices at the temple, you know, and it's like, I technically know those things, but to like, be like, no, at this time, this thing happened and this person was the head priest, whatever, you know, you do see that at that period of time that the powers that of the world had corrupted the temple to the detriment of the people, and the people had nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
The people had nothing to do with it.
They had no power.
They couldn't stop the situation. They were still going to the temple because that was the only way they knew how to interact with God. Their sacrifices were being stolen and sold to Rome. I mean, it was but the people themselves had not, they were powerless, but still desperately wanted to obey God. And so it makes it give it that extra level.
The whole thing whenever she said that they were decoys.
She did.
That's how it all started.
It did.
I read that. When I did not make that up, just to be clear.
I know, but you said read that. That's the first time we heard it.
Another author said that.
That's
reading the book about Mary.
And
that's
well,
I don't like that. It's not mine. I won't take it.
No, but it.
Take the credit in the room. You brought it to us.
I can take the credit in the room. Yeah.
You brought it to us.
But you started it, and that started the Hidden King, the paper on the Hidden King. Mm. And about how he stayed hidden because he had to be.
Yeah.
In light of all the corruption and the power that was going on, so that he became basically undercover for the whole thing.
Yeah, he had to be.
So this stuff that Rick Carter is talking to you about.
Didn't have Facebook back then.
He and I are going to do a Patreon special just on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to break it really far down. It's really a fascinating idea. Mm. And anyway.
And again, it points to possibly that Revelation is pointing out that corruption in highlight. Mm-hmm. And that's where my mind has already been focused on that connection in Revelation about the discovering that. Because again, I believe that Lazarus, that John, wrote Book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. And his connection would be, was always with the temple. Mm-hmm. And he always had that special connection. How, to what degree, we didn't know. But he is also highlighting some things that were never in a way that couldn't be highlighted directly. So if you're under tremendous amount of persecution, tremendous amount of power and corruption, if you want to expose it, you expose it always in a way that is hard for the people that are the corrupted ones to understand what is written. But if you have people that understand the language, understand what it means, mm-hmm. because of the true people, it was always written to Jews. Jews had the Old Testament language and all of the understanding of what that language meant. The people of corruption didn't understand none of it.
Yeah.
Because they never read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were Idumeans.
They never put any time into it.
Idumeans
from Idumea, yeah. That they weren't even, so the priesthood
and the kings. I'm so bad about doing this with words. That sounds like idiom.
Well, like Edomite?
E, the letter E, not the letter I.
But Edomite,
yeah.
Well, it's I-D-U-M-E-A-N.
I know, but it's
later.
For the land of Edom.
Yeah, Edom.
Right, like, so it's an area.
Descendants of Esau, okay. The hated one that God hated, generationally down, King Herod was an Idumean. He was not supposed to be a king, but Rome put him in power.
I'll never be that famous.
Never.
Hated by God, known for all time. I mean, it's a legacy.
It's a legacy.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you don't come across very many people named Esau, so
you don't. Well, let's pull this back in.
But Jacob, you do.
Yeah, yeah, you do. Let's pull this back into the Daniel chapter 8 study.
Yeah.
So, for my full preterist friends who are listening to this, this is what I'm saying. This is my at this time position. I think that one person that they're talking about at the time of the end, I think it's Antiochus Epiphanes. And I think the reason why it was the exact time and how long it was pointing to what Jesus was going to talk about later, the once and final thing. So I think it's like, I don't call it dual fulfillment in the same light. I think that it was fulfilled in its near time, but its overall purpose and meaning was for when the Messiah came.
But did you in your studies... I mean, I see where the connection very strongly can be in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about patterns and how the things cycle themselves over.
Because it happened again. It was another 3.5 years whenever they were sieged by Rome.
Yeah. Mm.
So literally, another 3.5 years.
Isn't that wild?
Yes. And then there was a man that killed the high priest, and he stood in. It was John Hyrcanus and Simon of whatever that was standing in the holy place. The sacrifices and the oblations were done away with. They were done. And then all of a sudden, and by the way, along with what your book would be saying, but the reality is that while Rome was in tumult during their civil war, and they could never keep, emperor in power, they were having issues. Vespasian was there. Vespasian was in Jerusalem.
He was.
He was the general
that
was there. And what happened was he had to leave and go back to Rome and to settle it.
His army forced him.
Yes, forced him back into Rome, and then he became the Caesar.
Yes.
Vespasian became the one in power, and so what did he do? He sent his son, Titus, to finish the job. Why? Because Israel—
And Titus actually did not want to. He told them to stop, but those legions, do you know where they came from?
Those were the Islamic people, weren't they?
They were the people who destroyed the temple were from Syria,
yes.
Lebanon.
Yep, they were the conscripts.
Iran, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
And so they are the people that destroyed the temple. Titus didn't want them to, that he was trying to stop it.
That's right.
So when I say, and you said, oh, the Antichrist has to come from the people who destroyed the temple, and that was the Romans. Technically, the people who destroyed the temple under Roman rule.
It fits your Islamic caliphate, but it also fits it within the fourth kingdom at the time.
It kind of does, yeah.
I mean,
if you're a futurist, you shouldn't be looking to Rome for your Antichrist. You should be looking to an Islamic—
I mean, they're doing
caliphate.
A pretty good job.
They're the only ones that behead
that was
people.
That was not nice. I shouldn't say that out loud. There's a lot of Catholics that I know and love. Sorry,
Europe,
guys. I'm just
playing. Europe is in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, and Britain's trying to stop it, but Europe, the continent, is in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah. So, you know, we have to be so careful, like—
I know.
It doesn't matter if Jesus is coming back or Jesus already came back, whatever.
it still matters now.
Christianity mm-hmm. and sharing the gospel is going to be punishable by death over there if they get control of those governments.
Yeah. And believe it or not, the Spirit's going to tell you to love them while they're killing
that's
you.
That's exactly right.
That's what's gonna, that's what you should be thinking that's and exactly feeling right. as a believer is that you're going to lay your life down for these others.
Yeah.
That's what happens. The Spirit does it to us.
Yeah.
We're not going to be hurting them. We're not going to go after them. Now, we can stop the threat, and I think that we should stand in the gap, but... Well, if you guys think we went all over the place for Daniel chapter 8, we did.
We solved it.
But we have solved everything about it. No, the reality is Daniel chapter 8 is a super zoom on two of the kingdoms, Media, Persia, and Greece. And based on what I'm seeing come out of Greece, the only thing that fits is Antiochus Epiphanes. And I think that that is the time of the end, the primer to understanding what Jesus is talking about whenever he goes back and says the abomination of desolation, standing in the holy place, that that will come. He's telling his contemporaries in his time because Jesus is the Messiah. When you see that, then you know that this is the end. This place is gone. Jesus himself is the one that said it was going to be taken out of the way and be made desolate and that they would see it in their time. And it happened. That happened. So whether, you know, whether you're a full preterist or not, you can agree that that happened. Now, mm-hmm. some people think a third temple is going to be built. I don't. That's just me. I don't see why there would be. Jesus Christ is the only temple that we'll ever need. And we're in him, and he's mm-hmm. in us. We solved it for bam! So take that. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Tiziana?
Yo.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I appreciate it. Sarita? This has been fun. We've only got what? 9, 10, 11, 12. We've got 4 more chapters to finish out Daniel. Mm-hmm. We're getting through it, baby.
Did I tell y'all about the, you might have seen it on my social media page, the IDF soldier I met?
No.
In America? I was at a Christian legislators conference, and he was there talking a little bit about what was going on in the Middle East. But he came up to me afterwards, and he goes, "Where did you get your name?" And I said, well,
you did tell me that on the phone, but you haven't told the audience yet.
Oh, so he said, "Where did you get your name, Sarita?" And I said, well, it's Spanish. It means little Sarah. And I said, it's also Indian. It means river. And I said, I think it means something in Arabic, but I'm not sure. He said, well, do you know the story of Jacob wrestling with God? And he gets his hip hurt. I said, yeah. And he said, do you know at the end when he said, Jacob or Israel, I'm going to change your name to Jacob. I mean, Jacob, I'm going to change your name to Israel because you have fought or striven with the Lord and with man and have prevailed. He said the word for fought or striven is Sarita.
It's a very appropriate.
And then he sent me a picture of what it looks like in the Hebrew letters, which I thought was really cool. And he told me like the names of the letters that it stands for. He said there are a lot of women, Jewish women in Israel named Sarit. He said, but there aren't any Saritas. And he said, that tells me everything I need to know about who you are. And he said, we're going to have another baby. And if it's a girl, she might be a Sarita. And I was like, it was really cool. And then he called me one day and he said, I'm sorry, I was going to call you earlier, but I was in a bomb shelter. Like, just matter of fact, like they were bombing us.
They live a different life.
It's a whole different
life. Can you imagine if you were Palestinian?
No,
Even more different life.
Crazy. But anyway, yeah. I just thought that was a really interesting story. I didn't know my name was, he said it's only used 3 or 4 times and it's always somebody who fights against the Lord or strives against the Lord or strives against mankind and prevails.
Yeah. Wow. That is so awesome. I remember you telling me that I got cold chills. When you told me, I was like, are you serious?
I want to have it like put on like a board.
Tattoo that on my face.
I don't do tattoos.
That's cool.
You know what it reminds me of though? It's so strange, but do you guys remember the movie Pulp Fiction? Did you ever see that movie?
Pulp Fiction?
You never did?
No, I'm kidding. Definitely.
You saw it? Okay. Never, yeah. Do you remember the part whenever Bruce Willis, he plays the boxer named Butch, and he's in the taxi cab, and that girl's like, Butch, what does this name mean, Butch? He said, I'm American, honey. Our names don't mean anything. Not true for Sarita. Big Daddy, thanks for driving up, baby.
Yeah, man.
He's got some pretty wild news. He's going to be moving away.
What?
Oh.
Did I ruin it for you?
No.
You might as well go ahead and tell it.
Yeah.
Where are you going to
tell it or no? You want to wait or you want to tell him now?
Well, I can tell him off.
Tell. Oh, you want to tell him off?
Tell him off.
And then we'll tell you the story.
Then we'll tell you the story.
All right, Andy, I appreciate it.
I can't wait to get told off by Rick.
I know. It's me coming, Pete.
You guys will find out soon enough.
Soon enough.
And we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Bye, y'all.
Later.
Hey, everybody. If you'd like to help us continue to make these episodes and get access to exclusive content, you could sign up at patreon.com, www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. That's www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. Thank you all so much.
When I'm in the kitchen, I make it look like I'm hosting my own cooking show. Pots clanging, oven doors slamming, me yelling stuff like, "Where's the roux?" I don't even know what a roux is, honestly. Meanwhile, what am I actually doing? Sprinkling on a little thing called my secret ingredient. That's it. That's the whole magic trick. They've got two blends, and honestly, they're doing all the work while I just look busy. First up, everything seasoning. This stuff turns your basic breakfast into a brunch masterpiece. I've put it on chicken, eggs, toast, hash browns. Oh, and last week, I sprinkled on leftover pizza like a total savage. Game changer. And yes, I got a little cocky and threw it on some apple slices. Is that illegal? Probably. Did it taste amazing? Yes. Now, for the main event, steakhouse seasoning. This seasoning turns your grill into a holy shrine of meat. Burgers, next level. Steaks, legendary. Portobello mushrooms, so good, I had to sit down for a minute. One shake and suddenly people are like, "Dang, you must have marinated this for days." And I'm like, "Totally, yep, marinated it in secret magic." So if you want to look like a culinary genius without actually doing much, head over to MySecretBlends.com. That's MySecretBlends.com. And don't forget to use code Burrows at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's B-U-R-R-O-S at checkout for 20% off your first order. Bang your pots, slam your drawers, but just know, the real secret, it's in the shake. My secret ingredient. Try it today.